20 years ago today, Queen Elizabeth of the United Kingdom and President François Mitterrand of France inaugurated an engineering marvel by crossing the English Channel on a train for the first time. They were opening the Channel Tunnel, or Chunnel, which would be the first land link between the two countries. Here's Queen Elizabeth marking the occasion back in 1994.
It stands as a monument to the joint efforts and talents of our engineers, technicians, and construction workers who faced and overcame many difficult and unexpected problems.
The tunnel took 7 years to build, and it's actually three 35-mile-long tunnels equipped for passenger trains and shuttles that can carry cars and trucks. We reach back into the NPR archives for this story from 1994 about the opening of the tunnel by reporter Michael Goldfarb.
Slowly, the silver train pulls away from the platform at the Eurotunnel terminal in Folkestone on England's southeast coast. Tests continue on the shuttle, the drive-on, drive-off train that will take cars and trucks under the English Channel. As the train passes beneath Overpass 4, Colin Kirkland, technical director of the project, explains that today they're testing the signaling system.
We've got these heavily loaded shuttle trains pulling away from the platforms we've just looked at, and they then have to negotiate a fairly tight bend into the mouth of the tunnel where they link up with the main line. And the main line trains, of course, are coming through from London and Paris at fairly high speeds. So there has to be a very careful signalling link to make sure that this particular form of Russian roulette doesn't lead to a disaster.
The opening of the tunnel represents the culmination of 30 years of work for Colin Kirkland and marks the end of almost 200 years of attempts to link Britain and France under the Channel. It wasn't until 1985 that former Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher and French President François Mitterrand signed the treaty that created Eurotunnel. And by 1987, the three tubes were being excavated. 11 boring machines, 2.5 stories high, were put into action, digging and building as they went along. At the peak of construction, each tube was being bored out at the rate of over 400 meters a week, more than a quarter of a mile each. 10 tunnel workers died during the process. The most difficult construction task, according to Kirkland, came in building two enormous maintenance caverns under the channel, each as long as a football field and higher than three tractor trailers stacked on top of each other. The caverns were dug out 35 meters below the seabed and another 40 below sea level.
Yeah, it was a fair achievement, and we were, of course, a little nervous then. If anything dripped out of the roof of the tunnel at any time while we were building it, people got very nervous.
Did anything drip out of the roof of
the
tunnel?
Well, we did have drippers out of the roof of the tunnel, and we did have to take action to make sure that the tunnel was secure at all times, yes.
So how did you secure against the occasional drip?
Well, as you excavate it, you put a temporary lining in of sprayed concrete, which you can reinforce with steel bars. And if the tunnel looks like settling in on you faster than you plan, you put more steel bars in and more concrete.
While the tunnelers were finishing off this engineering masterpiece underground, above ground, the Eurotunnel project was running into financial difficulties. The original cost doubled to almost $15 billion. A major problem was that the specially designed drive-on, drive-off shuttle trains were late in delivery. It's anticipated that the shuttle will be a major source of income for the Eurotunnel consortium. The direct high-speed train link between London and Paris will be an hourly service. But the shuttle, potentially, can take trainloads of 250 cars through the tunnel 4 or 5 times an hour. Yet it's the shuttle aspect of the Channel Tunnel project that worries the people Eurotunnel's directors need to impress, the bankers.
I have always questioned whether that side of the project could ever be viable.
Patrick DePelle is a director of London Merchant Bank, Klein Ward Benson. The reason for his skepticism? There's already a relatively efficient way for vehicular traffic to get from England to France.
Well, there is a well-developed ferry system. The ferry operators, of course, have not sat idly during the intervening period, and they have substantially upgraded their capability. And it remains to be seen whether lorry drivers and the motorist is going to be prepared to switch away from the ferry.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Captain Clive Wood speaking. Welcome on board P&O European Ferries, Pride of Calais. The vessel is now secured for sea and we're about to leave the berth. The weather for our trip across the canyon this afternoon, a bit of a breeze blowing in the channel, but sea conditions are good, so it should be a comfortable passage, and I hope you enjoy it. Thank you very much.
On a 2 p.m. sailing from Dover to Calais earlier this week, the general feeling of passengers underscored the banker's skepticism.
I prefer the boat because it's more nice. You see the landscape and you are out.
I think if it was a hurry, we'd use it. But I think if it's for pleasure, I would rather be able to come up on deck and see scenery. There isn't really anything to see down there. It'll be good for business people.
Yeah.
Changing those attitudes will be crucial to making Eurotunnel a profitable operation. Kleinwort Benson's Patrick DePelle says it will be some while before shareholders start receiving dividends.
I think that Eurotunnel is in for a rough ride. I think that the high-speed train element will be a success story, and very soon you'll find that the trains will be completely full, and that the travelling public, particularly the businessman travelling to Paris, will switch from air to rail. What is much less certain, in my view, is whether the shuttle will provide effective competition to the ferries.
Eurotunnel's Colin Kirkland entertains no such doubts.
And I strongly suspect that because this tunnel is here and because it's an all-weather, all-year route to France, that people will use it. And I firmly believe that the traffic will build at such a rate that within 10 years we'll be planning to build a second tunnel.
It will be a while before the prospects for the financial success of the Channel Tunnel are clear. Regular service was scheduled to begin next month, but that has now been postponed until at least the autumn. I'm Michael Goldfarb in London.
And Robin, again, that report from May 6, 1994, it's so interesting to listen back. But now we can actually answer some of the questions that people had back then, 20 years later. Michael said it was supposed to cost $15 billion to build. Well, it ended up costing $21 billion, according to PBS. And those concerns that the project would struggle financially played out. In 2006, the Eurotunnel company went through bankruptcy, but finally did turn a profit for the first time in 2012. And what about those alternative transportation methods? I remember taking the hovercraft across with my family. Those crossings ended in the year 2000. People also took ferries and still do. In fact, the UK's Department of Transportation reported that last year, 1.7 million more people traveled internationally from the UK via ferry compared with the Channel. And in terms of how many people have used the Channel altogether, 20 million used it last year, more than 300 million since it opened 20 years ago in 1994.
So that prediction we heard at the very end there from the gentleman who said, I predict more people will take trains, they won't take the tunnel. They're doing both, obviously.
Or that they'll build another tunnel. That hasn't happened, obviously. And you wonder how many people have crossed and accidentally driven on the wrong side of the road since England and France drive on the other side. Or how many Europeans have come to England and had the same experience as Chevy Chase did in European Vacation.
Look, kids, forget it. It's amazing. I cannot get left. There's Big Ben, kids. Parliament.
It's going around that roundabout in the UK.
This whole segment, Jeremy, was just so you could get that little bit of Chevy Chase on, wasn't it?
You always want to take the opportunities you can to get some vacation movies onto the air. Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. This is Here and Now.